Yes, thanks again for giving me this opportunity to talk to our people and brief them on the peace implementation process and progress. As you all know, on the 12th of November 2019, the parties to the agreement agreed for another extension of the pre-transitional period for 100 days. This was agreed upon in a tripartite meeting in Kampala, and thereafter it was endorsed by all the parties in Addis Ababa. We gave ourselves 100 days more to make sure that the outstanding tasks are fully implemented, and as such, a number of steps have been taken. Notably, the following tasks or activities were carried out. One is the government of the Republic of South Sudan provided funding for an amount of $40 million. And this money was received by NPTC in their accounts. So that was the first step, so that the activities that are still pending should be implemented. Thereafter, the NPTC disbursed the amount accordingly, and mainly on the security mechanisms. They were given money, starting with JDB, JMCC, JTSC, SDSR board, CITISAM in three factions of it, and then also NCAC. They were given funds to make sure that they carried out their activities. Other payments were also made to meet related expenses or expenditure, and notably the hotel bills, because the hotels are accommodating the members of mechanisms, both political and military. So we have to pay for their hotel bills, and then also the leaders of the mechanisms are also being facilitated by hiring vehicles for them, and that one is also another bill to be met. The same thing with travel expenses, pro and to, for the work of the mechanisms. That is also another bill to be paid. Also, the contractors who supplied food and non-food items to the cantonment areas have also to be paid. So those are the subheadings that the $40 million was used for.
Mm-hmm.
The second area is that, okay, what do you do with the $40 million or with the money disbursed to the mechanisms? The security arrangements are supposed to carry out a number of activities, and notably JMCC, which is in charge of the cantonment areas and barracks. They are supposed to do a number of things. What they have done, as we speak, the JMCC has sent out a number of teams, maybe 10 or 11 teams, to various cantonment areas throughout the three regions. And the task they are carrying out there is to complete the registration of forces who were not registered, in cantonment areas as well as in the barracks. Second is to also verify it, because they are carrying the list of those who were registered, to verify it, the availability of those registered, and then lastly, the forces in the cantonment areas will be transported to the training centers. In the training centers, 18 training centers are identified, and those are the areas where the forces will go. And each training center is supposed to have a capacity of 5,000 plus support staff. So in that case, those facilities are ready to take on over 90,000 forces. And we hope those forces will report to the training centers. The second one, what do they do when they are in training centers? Then the screening, biometric screening, and also fitness screening will take place in the training centers. Previously, it was supposed to take place in the cantonment areas, but later on, to pass track the activities of the security arrangement, then all will be taken there, and then screening is done. Then the separation of forces into various security sectors will be done. Those going for the army will be identified, national security, and then unified forces of police, fire brigade, and then wildlife, and then prison. Those forces will be separated, and then now, once you have done that stage, then they will now start the training. And the training will be done in various centers, and it will be done separately, as identified here. Police, unified police will have their centers, national security alone, and then the army in their training centers. So we expect the training to be completed maybe by the first week of February, and then deployment can now take place for those who have been trained. That is the ideal situation. We don't know what will happen on the ground, but what we know is that for us to meet the deadline of 22nd February to form the RT Gono, the JDB and its committees should make sure that they have to get training going as of second week of January, and that will give them ample time to make sure that it goes faster. And it again, going back to fast tracking the activities, then you do need to get all the 90,000 or 83,000 or whatever number. You have to start immediately with those that are available, so that even the deployment will go according to the stages you have achieved in training those forces. So that is what is expected to be done in this remaining period as far as security arrangements are concerned. Then we have another important item which is still outstanding, and that is the issue of the states, the number and boundaries of the states.
I'll come to the next. Let us have some questions on the funding issue, and also the transportation of forces to the training centers. You said that the $40 million was paid for the to the government, by the government, to the NPTC, and then NPTC has disbursed the money to allocated money to the respective committees. So is it confirmed? Can you confirm that each committee has got what they wanted?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the question
otherwise, is they would be complaining, and that, those complaints would have reached.
Yeah, because we heard something, some kind of a complaint that they.
Yeah,
well,
that one there was a hiccup.
Yeah.
In in receiving their mm-hmm. money, and especially JMCC and JTSC, which had very huge checks.
Yeah.
Their commercial banks could not clear those transfers until they were reversed. And then the central bank finally gave them the money they wanted, they needed. Yeah.
Okay, so that was a procedural delay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, also the question is, this $40 million, will it be the last payment in support of the peace process?
Well, as you remember, we have two things to note here. One is that our primary budget was $285 million. And then in May this year, when we extended the period for 6 months, then the government pledged to pay $100 million. Out of that pledge, $80 million have been received. And if you go by that pledge, then you still have $20 million to complete the $100 million. So we hope that the government will also pay the remaining $20 million, and not only $20 million, because the peace process is ongoing. It is not ending by the end of the pre-transitional period. Some of the activities we are talking about will be carried on during the transition, and therefore there will be funding for those activities. So we hope the government will
so as far as the pre-transitional period is concerned, you're still waiting for $20 million.
Yeah, if that $20 million comes, it will also help, and especially in the deployment of forces.
Yeah. The other question related to the cantonment is the issue of the supplies. The supply, food supply, seem to be delaying, and also complaints are coming that even some of the soldiers are deserting, and they don't have enough food, and the food is delayed. So that brings in the question of how the procurement process is being done by NPTC.
That's correct. You see, most of the food supplies was done by the forces themselves. The money we used to give them, they used also to go and buy directly, and then supply the items to the cantonment areas. That was one method. The second one was the NPTC contracting contractors to bring food from Sudan, and I think there were number of consignments. Two consignments were brought. some came to Juba, that was stored here, and eventually was distributed to the forces in Greater Equatoria. Another consignment came later on. It supplied the forces along the Nile up to Akobo, giving food to the cantonments and barracks on their way along the Nile River, as well as Sovet River and Narel Gila. So those were the ways we used to give food. As of the last one, what we did again, we said, okay, let us separate two issues. The money we gave to JMCC and JTSC was mainly for other activities, that is transportation and the rest. And then emergency food, which they are providing for 3-4 days before they transport the forces to the training centers. And then the NPTC is buying food for the training centers as we speak, and I'm sure some food items are being distributed, especially to areas in Greater Equatoria and also in Greater Barrel Gazal. So mm-hmm. that has been the way the purchase of food items. Mm-hmm. Has been conducted.
It can bring in a question of the existence of malpractices either by the contractors themselves or by the forces who have been given money, a lot of money, to deal with that. How can you deal with this?
Well, you see, any malpractice or mismanagement of resources, if it happens, the only way to detect it is to review the process and the delivery, and once it is reviewed and irregularities are found, then it will be done the normal way, that those who are responsible for those irregularities will be made accountable. But before that, before you do that, then, but we hope, and I think most of these things are, there is also this lack of coordination. Even I paid a visit to our stores last week, because we are expecting non-food items from Japan and China early next week. We found that there are a lot of items. There were no food items in these stores. They were fully distributed. But a lot of non-food items, tents, uniforms, blankets, are still there. Okay? So that again, and the people in the cantonment areas do not have shelter, do not have all those things, mosquito nets, are still lying there. So there is also element of coordination between NPTC and the mechanisms, the security mechanisms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, the cantonment sites, and now there's a shift from cantonment sites to training centers. Now, the processes that were supposed to be taking place at the cantonment sites seem to have been running into the training centers. Now, you speak about, referred that the screening and registration is being verified inside the training centers. Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, what it means is that the two committees, the JMCC is the one in charge of cantonment areas and the barracks. It is responsible also for the registration of forces in those areas. And then the screening should have been carried out jointly by JTSC and JMCC in the cantonment areas or in barracks, both in cantonments and barracks, before transporting the forces to the training centers. But I think the security mechanism decided to put the two together, and then those activities will be conducted or carried out in the training centers. What it means is that the screening, the separation of forces, because what is meant by screening is that you identified those who are fit to be in military and those who are not fit. Those who are not fit, sometimes there will be soldiers who voluntarily will say we are not going for military service. They'll rather go to DDR to be integrated into the to be integrated into civilian life.
Mm-hmm.
Then those who are and are biologically or physically unfit, then they will also be put to DDR. Now in the cantonment areas, in the training centers, so you will have two groups.
Yeah.
Group of those who are fit to go to the various security organs I talked about, and there will be a number of forces that will remain in DDR. And then these DDR forces, I presume, I don't know what the forces have decided or the leadership of the mechanisms have decided, but I assume that they will, once they are screened out, then they will be sent back to cantonment areas.
Size.
So
okay.
that the process of DDR will now kick off, and the committee or the commission of DDR is already in place, and they will receive those forces.
So what will take place now in the training centers, in the 18 training centers, is another screening, another level of screening for a final decision who will be going to which forces, and then they will be trained accordingly.
Yeah, once that screening is done, then they will be sent to various training centers among the 18s, which are earmarked for different...
For police and national security and the army.
Yeah.
Now, when is the NPTC going to assess this, whether, because you are supposed to report to the principals that, yes, we are ready. Are you going to wait until the deadline, or the 27th of February, or you are going to come out with your own assessment and recommend something?
Well, in the extension for 100 days, we made a number of steps to be taken. One of them is to evaluate the 100 days, and that evaluation will take place after 50 days from the date of extension, to find out how far have we gone. Did we make any substantive or substantial progress, or there are hiccups that need to be addressed? And that assessment is to be carried out under the auspices of IGAD. We are expecting IGAD to come up with a program or a schedule, a time schedule, so that the parties, together with IGAD and the new mechanism, they come and meet and then evaluate how far have we gone, which means the NPTC will be required to present a report on progress.
Yeah.
And then the security sector mechanisms, all the mechanisms, including NCAC, will be required to present reports to that evaluation consultative meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect it to take place Early next week.
Yeah. Now, listeners to Radio Mirror, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, and this is a nationwide program, and this is our discussion time. With me in the studio is Honorable Gabriel Changsun Chang, the Deputy Chairperson of the NPTC, that is the National Pre-Transitional Committee for the Peace Implementation, and he's also the leader of the Federal Democratic Party. And we heard in the studio assessing and looking into the current situation in the implementation of the issues agreed for the 100-day extension of the pre-transitional period. Honorable Changsun, let's move now to other pending issues. And you referred earlier to the issue of the number of states which is yet to be decided. And the question is, when we speak about the issue of the number of states and boundaries, is the work of the IBC or IPC report no longer discussable, or is out of the question at the moment?
Well, the issue of the work of IBC and TBC, according to the to the schedule in the agreement. They have completed their tasks. First, TBC completed its tasks and then handed over its recommendations to IBC. Then IBC also sat for a period of 3 months, deliberated on the number and boundaries of the states, and at the end they concluded their meetings by conducting or by making a decision which was supposed to be made by them, and that decision unfortunately became inconclusive. They voted, but the threshold of 7 South Sudanese versus 3 South Sudanese was not achieved. So the outcome was 6-4. And 6-4 by the agreement is inconclusive. And what they have done thereafter was to file up the report and then send it to IGAD mediation process. You remember last month we met, the political parties met under the auspices of the deputy president of South Africa, who facilitated also the meeting, and the parties discussed what next. According to the agreement, once the referendum, the IBC could not produce a breakthrough, then there was one option, and that is the commission should transform itself into a referendum commission. But because of the importance of establishing the revitalized transitional government of national unity, then the commission did not has not yet transformed itself into a referendum commission, because there is still room for the parties to discuss and agreed on the number and boundaries of the states after the failure of IBC. So, and that is why that process conducted or facilitated by the deputy president was was undertaken. And now, in that meeting, on those meetings, we met for 3 days, and some progress was made in the sense that the aim was that let us move away from contentious positions. That is 10 states and 32 states. Let us meet in the middle, in case between 32 and 10, because there are options there which can resolve the issue of the states and their boundaries. Notably, the 23 districts plus Abyei, you have 79 counties of 2005, you have the three regions. After examining those options, the general consensus on many parties except the government was to go for 24, and that is 23 plus 1. That was one option. The second option was that, okay, that one, the first option is trying to address a number of things. One, you go for a lean government, which means you will reduce the cost of administrative expenses on the states. Two, you need to resolve the disputed areas. And then three, you will also you will also reduce the financial burden, which is included in that one. That one was one consideration. The second consideration was that, okay, if we don't want any of the choices in between, then let us go beyond 32. Let us go for 32 plus, which means that 32 plus, you can have 33, you can have 34, 35, 36, whatever number agreed upon, provided that you address the land issue, the land disputes. Any solution among those two options that addresses the land issue would be welcome. And especially when the issue of more estates would only be facilitated by or will be dictated by the consideration of political aspirations, too, that peace is always expensive and you have to pay heavily so that you achieve it. Mm. So if that is what it takes, then let us also go for that one. So at the end, the conclusion of that meeting was that IO, SAWA, FDs, and then OPP agreed for 23 plus 1. And then Tigono stood at 32. And now the second step, which is going to be taken next week, is that the deputy president of South Africa will come again to the region to make a number of consultations. One is to consult with Dr. Riek, two, with President Kiir, three, with leaders of Sudan, and then four, leaders of Uganda, to find to consult and with the intention of finding a breakthrough from where we stood. Thereafter, then the parties will be summoned again to come and meet finally, either with that breakthrough arrived at through shattered diplomacy, or we are still at the stalemate, and then we will come and ask ourselves, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. And thereafter, if we hope there will be consensus on this number of states, and thereafter, then the issue of estates would have been resolved. If it is not resolved, then the mediation will now see how they can move forward with the stalemate or with the two positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, all this you are saying has taken place in Juba here days ago, and the next shuttle diplomacy by the Deputy President of South Africa, is it supposed to take place before the evaluation of the 50 days or after?
Yeah, I think it was supposed to take place before, but unfortunately, because when we adjourned the first meetings, we adjourned for a period of 10 days. Now it is more than, you can say it is almost 20 days since that time. So now you are faced with two dates coming together, the shuttle diplomacy and the issue of estates, mm. and then the evaluation of the 50 days.
Mm. So it's likely that the evaluation will be delayed because of these visits?
It is possible. Mm. If he comes, he is supposed to come on the 3rd or 4th. Mm. The information we got today is that the deputy president will be making meetings in the region, that is Sudan and Juba and then Kampala, between 4th and 6th of January, which means it will happen before the evaluation consultative meeting, mm-hmm. which has not yet been scheduled mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. IGAD.
Is there an opportunity? You think there is still an opportunity to reach a breakthrough on this issue of the number of states?
Yes. I don't think that peace agreement will break down because of the number of states. we as you see, if you go back to the origin of or devolution of powers to the states or to various levels, it happened in the British time, in the colonial days. That's mm-hmm. where we have 23 districts, and then now we say plus a BA. Those ones, the British did not consult with the public. Similarly, in 1983, it was President Jaffa Nimeiri who divided South Sudan into regions, three regions. He didn't consult with South Sudanese in general. The same thing, Omar al-Bashir decreed the creation of 10 states, which was part of the 25 states of the Sudan. Mm. There was no popular consultation. Dr. Riek attempted to divide South Sudan into 21 states. He didn't consult. Similarly, 28 and 32 were also established by President Kiir. All those establishments,
yeah,
or all those developments were based on administrative and political decisions. Yeah. So we can also do the same.
So,
provided that, I think what is important at this juncture is peace. And as I said earlier, peace is expensive. We can't bury our pride, our this one, for the sake of peace.
It's good you mentioned that when you were giving the options that were discussed for the decision, I mean in the consultation on the number of states, you brought up the issues of lean government, reducing the expenditure and all that. But there's a general feeling that this is all just a matter of having a conflict, fighting in another way. The fighting has been shifted now from the other issues into the number of its states. It's become an issue itself. It has taken its own life, and politicians are being described as they have an interest behind this, and they don't want to really speak what is the interest behind the number of states and so forth. We understand that as journalists, we know that the issues of constituencies, issues of voting, and how you call dawair intikhabiya, and then power basis and also economic basis are behind this. And when these things are discussed during a conflict, when the feelings and tensions are high, do you think that people will just swallow the bitter pills that politicians will decide?
Well, I think the decision that should be taken by the politicians should be in the interest of the people and of the country. Okay? If that decision is based on those two objectives, then it will not disadvantage anybody.
Mm.
That is one. Two, yes, in the first place, the issue of states was not in the radar when the war broke out. But again, when in 2014, when the 21 states were created by Riek in the in his
areas of control.
Yeah, not only in the areas of control, in the whole country.
Yeah, in his own party.
In his own party. Then it triggered off.
Yeah, we know that dynamic.
Okay,
yeah.
Then that one, that is why we are saying mistakes were made. Like what we are doing now with the peace agreement, we made this peace agreement because we made mistakes by taking the country to war. And now we are rectifying it by this agreement.
Yeah.
Similarly, the mistakes made in the issue of on the issue of states, we have also to rectify them.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Now you know we have I think the people of South Sudan will have a better say if that Artigunu is formed and then the transition kicks off, then we now get involved or get engaged in the constitutional making process, which is in chapter 6.
So you are alluding that, you are hinting that whatever you decide now will be transitional.
It will be transitional.
So people are going away with the idea that whatever is decided now will be the permanent thing.
No.
So it's good that you say it is going to be transitional, it's going to be for the 3 years only, and then the South Sudanese through their representative in the transition,
will
in the constitution making
themselves.
Process, will decide which states, because this is
not only the number of states, actually,
and many other things.
It is the governance system as a whole.
Yes, and that will decide also what kind of governance we want, because the whole process for us seems to be devoid of the basic principles and arguments and policies of building a state, because we are so fragile, we are fragmented, we are divided along ethnic lines, and the tendency is that by default everybody will say, I don't want to stay with these people, with those people, and we want our own states, we have been marginalized, we want to get our resources and all that. But the overall picture is not clear to everybody, so that what decision is being made, any decision that is made, is being made by emotional tendencies rather than reasoning, and with the aim of bringing people together.
And actually that is what is meant here. Whatever decision taken by the leaders of the political parties now will be a temporary arrangement, something we can live with during the transition. And then now, immediately, we can go down to the constitutional making process, and all the parties, not only that, it will be a popular exercise, because we will be developing our permanent constitution. It will not be done by elites. All the forces will be represented everywhere in South Sudan, and once they have developed that that document, then again that document will be subjected to popular vote, the referendum. For instance, what type of federal system we want? Is it parliamentary, the British way, or is it presidential, the American way, or mixed?
And divisions of the constituencies will come out.
And then we decide also what level of government. Okay, so all those things will be streamlined in the constitutional making process. So now, why don't we have a temporary arrangement? Even this agreement is also a temporary arrangement.
Yeah. Okay. Even the five vice president will not be there.
These are the bloated parliament.
Will not be there.
So these things are done simply to make us agree, to make us live together for now, and then we put our house in order.
Okay. As politicians, you have a chance of deciding how to run the transitional government in any number of states, and then the process of the last and permanent numbers will be decided during the another step, another process. Now, we are coming to the end of the program. We have left with 2 minutes, and because we had a lot of issues to explain, and thanks for really taking time to explain all these. And what would be your message to the listeners as we speak about these two issues, and we are coming to a new year?
I think the message that is relevant to us as people of South Sudan is, one, let us pray for peace throughout the country, that Lord Almighty gives us the courage, the wisdom to achieve peace in our country, so that we live side by side with one another. So prayer is very crucial for all of us, our churches, everything. Number two is that we as South Sudanese, let us engage our political leaders. Let us talk to them that we cannot have a country if we don't make compromises, if we don't give and take. So even if we were to have these problems, if we base it on give and take, compromises will be there. And compromises is the daily life we live in our families. husband and wife, if there are no compromises, if there are no give and take, that home will shatter. So the same thing it translates into our this one. So let us engage our leaders, engage them positively so that we strike compromises. And then for the sake of what? For the sake of our united South Sudan and for the sake of its downtrodden people of South Sudan. Good luck.